Dr. Jerry, you got the whole world waiting. Been ready for you to start the conversation. Your point of view, it got the haters confused. Leave it up to you to bring us all the good news. Positive vibes and the sex appeal too. Dr. Andre Jerry, can I get an interview?
Welcome to Live with Dr. Andre Jerry, your primetime destination for bold conversations, unfiltered truth, and real-life inspiration. I'm your host, Dr. Andre Jerry, broadcasting live from San Juan, Puerto Rico. Wherever you're tuning in from tonight, on behalf of myself and the Artists First Radio Network, I appreciate your listenership and your support. So let me ask you something. Have you ever wondered what happens after we die? Like what actually occurs when we leave this body, or if this life is even all there is? If those types of questions ever crossed your mind, then you tuned in on a good night. Now, over the past decade or so, we've seen a huge spike in conversations around spiritual enlightenment, manifestation, higher consciousness, near-death experiences, all of that. So this subject matter is not a niche subject matter anymore. It's everywhere. And I think the reason for that is because people are waking up. Folks are reaching higher levels of awareness and realizing that there's a lot more to this life than we can see, touch, or explain. We're starting to understand that we're not just bodies with souls. We're souls having a human experience. And the rise in NDE stories is one more confirmation that there's something beyond that veil. And many people are hungry to know what that something is. Our special guest for tonight has lived to tell the tale, literally. He's what we call an NDE-er, someone who's had a near-death experience, or more specifically, an out-of-body experience. And his story is going to shift your whole perspective on this thing. Now, if you've been following the show, you know I've been sort of low-key obsessed with near-death experiences over the past year or so. I've watched dozens of personal accounts, and, you know, each one is different. They have different circumstances, different journeys, different lessons. But even with those differences, there seems to be some common theme that connects them all. And while many of these NDE stories have left an impression, there was one story in particular that really resonated with me. So I reached out to the man behind it, and luckily we were able to connect and have him on the show tonight. So let's go ahead and get into it. Tonight's guest is an Army veteran, international speaker, spiritual healer, entrepreneur, and author. His new book, I Walk Amongst Gods, debuted at number one in its genre on Amazon in February of last year and is currently holding strong at number six on the bestseller list for teen and young adult nonfiction on death. And I'm honored to welcome him to the show tonight. Let's give a virtual round of applause to our guest tonight, Jeff Cleckley. Jeff, how are you today?
Thank you. I'm doing great. I appreciate the interview. I appreciate being here. I'm grateful to be here. And I'm just sending light and love to all of your listeners right now.
Oh, wow. And it's well received. And the pleasure is all mine, really. I'm very excited that you're here. And hey, listen, congrats on your new book, I Walk Amongst God. I finished it a couple of days ago. I thought it was a fantastic read. And it's been doing really well on Amazon. Are you surprised by how well received your book has been since it's been released?
Yes, I am. I am surprised. And yet there is also, you know, I'll say science or a method behind that, you know. And that's one of the things I'm going to talk about today is what I was taught and how to manifest things in this world. And yes, I am surprised and overwhelmed at every step of this journey. I've been overwhelmed and surprised and just grateful that the hand of the Almighty is on me.
Yes, I understand. I get it. I'm a published author as well. It's always a great feeling when your hard work is recognized and well received by others. And we're going to talk a little bit more about your book a little later. But first, can you tell our listeners a little bit about what was happening in your life prior to your near-death experience and the circumstances that led to that event?
Yes, so I'll rewind about 6 months before the actual event. And this was a significant thing that happened to me. You know, I had, so in the book, it alludes, it talks about me being a veteran and I was in the service. And, you know, I was a paratrooper. I jumped out of planes and I had a few bad accidents, you know, in my time. I gave to the United States military parachuting accidents that left me in a lot of pain when I exited the service of the military. And so around this time, I had been dealing with these back issues since I got out of the service in the 90s. And now this is 2012, December of 2012. And I'd been dealing with it, working on the VA helping me in my pain management. And this particular time, you know, my back just gave out. And on December 21st, 2012, I remember the day specifically. I woke up that day. I was off from my job, and I was going to do Christmas shopping for my two younger children who were home with me at the time, you know, living with me. I shared custody with them. You know, my daughter was 16 and my son was 4 at that time. And so I got up to go and do this shopping. And that day, my back just completely gave out. I fell to the floor and I could not walk. I was in so much pain I couldn't walk. And I remember crawling to the bathroom, pulling myself up on my bathroom sink to reach in to my medicine cabinet and get some Vicodins that I had in there from a tooth extraction I had maybe a month or two prior. And, you know, that right there was what set it all off. So now I go to, I get help from the VA, and they put me on these powerful painkillers at this time. Before, they wouldn't put me on the powerful painkillers. You know, I was taking for this back pain over the span of 15, 20 years, you know, Aleve and acetaminophen. But at this time, you know, so now I get a meeting with the VA. I make my way to the VA hospital. I could barely walk, drag myself to the car. You know, they had to send out a wheelchair to wheel me in because I couldn't get out of my car. And so now they put me on these very powerful painkillers that, you know, for at this time, at that time, I was happy to have them. I was happy to be on them, you know. And I'm going through this, you know, and now we're in January, we're in December. And then, you know, I noticed when I look back on this whole situation, I noticed things just kept spiraling the wrong way before I actually died. So the next thing that happened to me, not even a few days later, I caught pneumonia. Now I'm in bed, I can't move, and I got pneumonia. We're still in December, headed towards January of 2012, headed towards January 2013. I can't move. You know, I got pneumonia, and I thought, that's weird. I got pneumonia, and if I cough, sneeze, or anything, it hurts my back. It was just a lot of pain. And so I got over the pneumonia. I'm still in back pain. Mobility is at zero, can't get around, hard to do anything. And all of a sudden, I don't know what it was, but we're in the February of 2013, and I contract MRSA. Now, for those who don't know what MRSA is a bacterial infection that has killed many people, you know, and it's a serious bacterial infection. And so I contract this MRSA, and I'm taken to the hospital, and I'm in the hospital for 7 days on, you know, with IVs of antibiotics in my veins, you know, just constantly flowing through, you know. And I remember on the sixth day, around the sixth day I'm in there, the doctor comes. He said, we got it. We got as much as we could. He sat down on my bedside, and I remember it. He said, you know, people die from this. And the reason why you've been here so long is because all of the strains of antibiotic weren't working. And, you know, we used the strongest one here on Earth. He said, if this wouldn't have worked, you would have expired. So that was another thing leading up, that when I look back in retrospect, leading up to this. And it seems like, you know, I put together this theory that people see their deaths coming, they just don't recognize it. You know, I put together that theory about myself because, you know, after I had the MRSA, then they had to go and do surgery on my knee where it originated because they couldn't get it all. It was in my bloodstream, was everywhere. So they had to go and do surgery and clean out all around my bone and everything around my knee to get all the bacteria out. So now I'm off of the MRSA. I'm actually stitched up. You know, my leg is I'm in stitches, this 8-inch scar from my knee to my shin, and I can't walk anyway because my back's still hurting from these painkillers. But at this time, now we're rolling into April of 2013, and I'm sick of being in the house for 6 months now, close to 6 months. And I decided that, you know, I had a friend or a female friend. I was single at the time or separated, working on divorce. And I decided that, no, I wasn't going to live life just cooped up. So I planned a date with this female friend of mine. And I began to get ready for this date. And back was hurting, and I was in a lot of pain. And so I took my pills on time and regularly scheduled. And as I'm getting ready, I realized the pain wasn't going away. So I took two more. And I was allowed that much, you know, for pain. And something happened in the time I was getting ready and being loopy from the four pills I had just taken, the four, and the four opioids that I had taken. I took two more. And now, and this is in the span of, I'm going to give it 45 minutes, six of these powerful painkillers. And that's what's started, you know, my overdose. And I remember what I can remember how it started was the nausea that came, you know, and then I'm in the bathroom and the sweating profusely. I'd never sweat like that. I used to play basketball, football, and everything. I've never sweat like that, just not doing anything. And it's running down my face, and I'm vomiting into the bathroom toilet. And then it got so bad that I couldn't hold myself at the bathroom toilet. So I'm just on my side vomiting, and there's this pain that I'm feeling, and like someone stabbed me in the stomach, and it felt like a bunch of my stomach was hurting. I had vomited everything out of the contents of my insides. So now it's just dry heaves and pain, and I'm feeling myself fading in and out of consciousness. And there was this moment when you come to the realization, I'm dying. Like nothing ever, you know, nothing, you know, even in my parachuting accidents, there's one time that it crossed my mind that I could be dying, but not like this. It wasn't like this. There was one accident I had that I thought I was dying, but it wasn't like I just had a lot of brain swelling. That's what that was about. But this was, you know, I just knew it. And I even said it in my mind, you know, this is what it's like. So this is it, you know. But once the thing about that experience right there was, there was a point where all of the pain and the fear just stopped. You know, it just stopped. And that pain and that fear were gone. And all of a sudden, I'm looking at myself laying on the floor. You know, I'm looking at myself. And I'm like, that's me. And then it got real. It got real after that. Because as soon as I see myself laying there, it's like something beckoned me. And I began to be pulled through this tunnel, and I'm being whisked down this tunnel at a high rate of speed. And one of the things I remember is that, you know, being a paratrooper and being in planes and moving fast through the air, you can feel the wind rushing up. I felt no wind rushing. I just moved through this tunnel very fast. I came out on the other side of this tunnel where the light was, and I'm in this place. It's a realm. How I explain it in the book is, it's like you're standing at the edge of space, but there's no stars, you know, and you're looking out into this abyss, this void, this darkness, and these three beings approach. And, you know, they just appear. They don't come moving at me. They just appear right in front of me. And the one, what I call the main being, it had the essence of a woman, you know. And this is what I speak on this. I always say that, you know, I think in my experience, and every experience is different, because I believe that in its infinite wisdom, creation, the Creator brings us to this place with things that we can relate to, or we don't have a fear of. So, you know, I relate very well to women. So this mother figure, this female figure, was who was, I'll call, handling me, or being the one guiding me through this, what now became what in the near death, the life review. So, which I didn't know, you know, anything about this life review or anything. So I'm standing here. Now, I should go back and mention that as I'm coming through this tunnel, all of life, everything that I had going on the earth plane, it was like in an instant I cared nothing about. Mm-hmm. Had no more care for it. It's like I released all of that holding on to anything that was there, except for my son, who was at that time 4 years old. And I was in this struggle, moving through this tunnel as I'm dying. You know, the thing that was on my mind the most was my son. He's going to be raised without a father, you know, here.
Right.
You know, being an African-American male, I strongly believe and know that African-American males, all males need their fathers, yet the circumstances that happen in the United States is where an African-American male can excel greatly if he's got a father in his life and a father figure. And I felt that about my son, and I was very angry about dying. You know, I was mad. So by the time I get to this spot I'm standing in, when I'm whisked through, you know, I'm angry about dying because of my son. I didn't want to leave him there, here on earth, without me. And so I must say this, though. While I'm angry like that, this place that I'm in, there's only love here. The only feeling that I felt here was love. And it was the most beautiful love that I've ever felt. I haven't experienced that love here in the earth realm. And, you know, my father is a loving man, and he's always loved me with this love that sometimes I even thought it was more than my brothers, because we had this thing where, you know, we had this big hug, and that's what he called it. Give me my big hug. Hey, Jeff, where's my big hug? he'd come in from work anytime, you know, and it's, Jeff, where's my big hug? And that's the love that we have. And he still, at 80 years old, gives me that big hug. And nowadays he'll say, the reason I squeeze you so hard is because I'm pushing this love into you when I squeeze you, you know? So that's the love that I've experienced here from my father. And I was there on that side, and that love there was greater than that love that I feel for my father and my father feels for me. And that, for me, growing up with a father, and my father being a driving force in my life and teaching me a lot about loving, it was more powerful than that. So for me, it was more powerful than that love. This love is so powerful that it's the reason why I do what I do this day, you know. And so that love was in that place. And now I'm standing here, and now I begin my life review. And as I'm going through my life review, you know, we would go through scenes of my life where I did great things, you know, and I can remember these things, you know, helping a homeless person that nobody would help, you know, doing things in people's lives, you know, making them feel happy. And you can feel that joy you gave them, you know, when you're watching it, and then you can feel the joy that they felt, you know, and those were good things. And the being that was with me, it was encouraging. It was like, you did a great job. This was wonderful. You know, continue that in your journey. And then we came to the aspect of the bad things. Now, the bad things, when we come across the bad thing, I would get this. It wasn't a chastisement. It was just telling me that you did it wrong. And next time, do it a better way or do it this way. This was the teaching that now when this being was saying next time, she wasn't talking about me going back right now. She meant, because they had already put it in my mind what was about to happen. So what was about to happen was, after this life review, I was going to be reincarnated back into the world as a baby. And I would have to, all those things that I didn't fix, didn't have right in the previous life, this would be my opportunity to fix those things and continue to build on the great things or the good things that I was doing in life. Now, so when that was about to happen, so now they were telling me these things, so for the next time, for my reincarnation. So she was more or less, it was a chastisement, I would say, but not in the sense that you did it wrong by and make you feel bad. No. I was only made to feel good about everything that was happening. I only felt good, but what was in me was the conviction of knowing that I did wrong. Now, after they show it to you and you feel the pain of the person that you hurt, and then what can we call it? Spider webs, or it cascades into the lives of the people that love the person that you hurt. You could feel how it messed up their lives and the things that you've done to hurt other people. You're not just directly that person, but when you hurt this person, you hurt his mother, you know, you hurt his brother, you hurt his father, because they felt pain when you hurt this person. So this was what I was feeling, and this is what I was being shown. Now, after the life review, this is when it was like, what do you got to say for yourself before you go on and reincarnate? You know, and I was still feeling that anger that I was going to leave my son behind. And I don't know where it came from. Maybe it was out of anger, desperation. But I said, look, you sent me down there. And I said, this is exactly what I said. You, or whoever's running this, you sent me down there and you never showed me how to do it. And yet I stand before you and you're telling me that I've been doing life wrong down there. If I go with you, fine. Because this is I even said it. This is the best feeling I ever felt in all of my existence. And if I go with you, fine. Yet, if you send me back and teach me how to do it, I'll do it right. And with that, this is when this million, uncountable number of light, beings of light, just appeared in that darkness, in the back, that in that darkness I spoke about, the void that you, and they began to impart something into my brain that at that time, at that moment, when all of them began to speak or put into my mind, it sounded like thunder. It was so loud I couldn't comprehend what was being said, and I was about to speak. And just when I was about to speak to the being who was that was right there with me, it said, "Don't worry about trying to understand it. You'll understand it when you get back." And I'm getting fed with all these things. Now, as they're doing that, as they're putting all of this into my head, I'm having a conversation with these three beings. You know, the two that were on the side and the female that was the main one, the, I will say female gender essence, you know, because it wasn't female. It was female essence. And so they began to put in me things about the the earth realm that I needed to know, and they put in me about mankind. First, they put into me that I had to teach this. If I'm going back, that was the deal that was made. If you're going back, you got to teach this. So as soon as those beings popped up, those million, they started downloading into me that you're going to have to teach this, and this information that you're receiving right now is what you're going to teach. So they began to download this information, and those beings began to speak. And as they began to speak, they were telling me how mankind is being corralled. This is the words that they said. Mankind is being corralled into a way of thinking that that is not their own, yet they believe it's their own because of the choices that we've been given. So it's basically here on Earth, we're given a choice. We're only given two choices, and these aren't the choices. It can be any circumstance. And I can relate to this was before the pandemic, but I can relate to the pandemic as what they were talking about, because we were given choices, but we weren't given all the choices, you know, and these were some things that, you know, I'm just jumping ahead about that fact about these choices, and that it's been happening all throughout our existence here, how we are, every choice that we take takes away a freedom. It takes chisels at our God-given right to our free will and our freedoms here on Earth. And so I was being shown this, and then I was being told that I needed to study every aspect of the human existence when I got back. So I had to do that. I had to, and then I had to teach what I'm being told, what I'm being taught here back, you know, when I get back. So, they gave me a lot of things, a lot of information, and sometimes it's so much that you can't fit it all in one segment, because it's information about the existence of humankind, you know, here in this realm. So with that and all of the information, they said, all right, it's time to go back. And so when it was time to go back, they said, okay, think on the one thing that, oh, I forgot. This is the main thing. And there was one thing they began to speak to me. I'll call it God. And this was my charge. They told me this. They said, I'm going to give you these things, these three things. You do these three things and your walk in life will be easy. And when you get back. And one, and it was three commandments, basically. One, love everything because I am everything. Now, this is creation speaking to me at this time. Love everything because I am everything. Fear nothing, because fear and doubt are the destroyer of mankind. And the last thing was know that I am God. And it told me if I do those three things, to love everything because it's everything, fear nothing because fear and doubt are the destroyer of mankind, and know that I am God, that my walk in this life will be easy, and that the things that I in this life that I want will come easy. And so with that, they told me to focus on the one thing on this earth, on the earth, that you love. And by this time, there was nothing on earth I loved except for my 4-year-old son. That was it, because something about separating from the earth plane and going into this place, you just leave you lost love for everything on that place. It's interesting. It was, my experience was interesting that I didn't have a love for, you know, at that time, you know, I could say, I was able to let go of my brothers, my sister, my family, my mother, my father. I was able to let all of that go, you know, and be cool with it. And that's what, so the only thing I had that I truly loved back on earth was my son. And I focused on that. And the next thing you know, I'm back in my body. 6 hours had gone by. I'm crying. I know what I just happened to me. And, you know, I was crying tears of joy because you don't touch that thing without feeling that love. That love that's what keeps me going to this day, is that love that I felt. And the embrace, I just knew I had just spoke to God, met God. I wrote in one thing once, I said, I just danced with death, and it was beautiful. It was amazing. It was beautiful. And I survived it. I came back. But this was my love, the love that God had put in me. It had me crying on the floor. I was reflecting on everything that happened, and I'm thinking to myself, now this just happened, and I had a lot of questions. I had many questions. The pain in my stomach was back. My throat was very dry from dry heaving and throwing up. Yet I had many questions, and I wanted to go back. Believe it or not, I wanted to feel that love again. So that's what led me into the transcendental meditations and my spiritual awakening, because now I wanted to experience that again. And how do I get back to that feeling? So I tried many things, you know. In the beginning, I've experienced DMT because I wanted to. Now, at this time, when I came back, there was something attached to me, and in the very beginning, it was the voice. It was the silent, still voice that was leading me in everything I did, you know, and it would speak to me. And so I wanted, I began searching for my way to feel that. So I tried DMT at least six times. I tried mushrooms.
What DMT is for anyone who is not familiar with that.
DMT is diethyltryptamine. It is a substance that I can explain like this. It's called the spirit molecule, and DMT, doctors say, so what I studied, and this is the reason why I was led to DMT, scientists will tell you that every living thing has DMT in it. You get this DMT release when you're dying. Your brain releases DMT from the pineal gland, which I believe, and and it's the spirit molecule.
It's a psychedelic.
Psychedelic, exactly. It's a psychedelic that touches the spiritual side of things. It's natural, but it can be synthesized. You know,
this to try to get the feeling back from when you were on the other side.
Yes, that and just more answers,
mm-hmm.
more closer to whatever that thing is up there that we call God, closer to that, you know. So I had experiences in that, and I did have some enlightening things happen during the DMT experiences, yet it felt artificial. It didn't feel like I was touching with God. So I began, I just began deep meditation, meditation. And listening to that still voice, which now I can tell you, its name is Metatron. This guardian angel that came back with me, you know, different circles will call it my higher self, you know, different circles of thinking. I like to call it Metatron.
I remember that name from the book. Now, was Metatron the primary being of the three that you saw on the other side, or is this a different?
Yes. No, Metatron was not the primary being that was there.
Okay.
He was not. It just came with me. And here's the thing that I truly believe was, we all have a guardian angel, higher self, that guides us, you know, through this life. I strongly believe it. Now, you know, my mother used to speak about it when we were kids. I remember an incident where we were out, me and my brothers, we were out doing something bad. And we came home and my mom told us exactly what we did. And she said, and we were like, how you know? She said, your guardian angels told me. So that's my experience with guardian angels. But what I've come to realize is that they are real. You know, Metatron is really real to me. You know, if we can get into that part of it, I don't want to go off script or anything, but, you know, there was one incident that happened where when I wasn't even telling anybody that Metatron was with me for at least for years, you know. Even after I found out it was Metatron, I didn't tell anybody because Metatron told me don't tell anybody for some years, you know. And it was, I walked into a room, a setting where a woman who, she practices Santeria. I don't know if you're familiar with Santeria. Being from Puerto Rico, maybe you know about Santeria.
I've never heard of it before, no.
It's more or less down in Brazil, because that's where she was from. And Santeria is pretty much, I don't know, you could call it voodoo or whatever. That they speak with the spirits of the dead and they give them insight into things. And, you know, this is a religion it's in the Caribbean and down there in South America, I know. So I walk in and this individual who practices Santeria, and we're not really on great terms, but I had to be in this setting. So she looked at me and she said, there's a 10-foot-tall dark being that's right behind you. And I laughed, I smiled, I said, oh, you can see it. I said, that's my protector. He's not black, he's blue, he's a deep blue. And that's all I said to her, you know. So that was the first person that seen it. And then I was at a conference in Curacao in May, and there's other spiritual speakers there, and she said she saw it. She said, I see Metatron standing behind you, before I had even said anything, you know. And that was interesting. But those are the two people that I know that have seen this being that I speak about.
So basically he was or she was a seer, and she was able to see that.
Yeah, she was a seer. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah,
and I want to go back for a minute, because I think when we got to Metatron is the name. I remember that from the book. I think we lost some people there.
Oh, mm-hmm.
So Metatron, from what I understand from the book and what you're saying today, mm-hmm. that was the sort of the spirit guide that came back with you.
Yes.
After that NDE.
Yes. Event. Yes. Yes.
Had you experienced Metatron before your NDE and just not realize it was him or that entity?
You know, what I can say is throughout life at certain periods of time, I've heard this same distinctive, I call it this small, still, calm voice, you know. And different religions will call it different things, you know. They'll call it the Holy Spirit speaking to you. It's the smallest, the voice that doesn't make you do anything. And you can pass this voice up if the chaos of the world is rambling through your head. This voice can go right by, and you know, because it'll speak in the softest terms. That's how I know who it is. But I'd experienced it once before, or a few times before in my walk through life and spirituality, as far as Christian upbringing or wanting to talk to God in earnest, you know, and just listening. At that time, I didn't know that its name was Metatron. I was just listening because I could feel that it had attached itself to me. It was very strong. But at that time, there was, all of my senses were heightened, you know, my intuition, my connection with nature, the astral projections, the clairvoyance, looking into people's eyes and seeing their spirit, their and then seeing their halo or their aura around them. Things like everything had just heightened at that point. So I was hearing this voice very, you know, very clearly. And it wasn't until 6 months after me coming back that I asked it its name. I didn't even know I could. I didn't know it had a name. I didn't. So when I asked it, and this was after I had began this deep meditations that helped me go back to that what I call the second heaven in the spirit. And so these deep meditations led me to hone these gifts that I was given as well. And so it was 6 months later that Metatron revealed itself to me. So we're still in, you know, 2013 at this time, and Metatron reveals itself to me, and yet he tells me, don't tell nobody. There's a lot of things that happened, that where Metatron told me, don't tell anybody. And it was only until 2017 that I was given permission to speak on this Metatron, the name.
How does your family react to all of this stuff?
Oh, my goodness. You know, I have a huge family in this part of the world. My father had 15 brothers and sisters, you know, cousins, a bunch of cousins. I grew up like brother cousins, sister cousins, big family, and pretty much all of them just stopped messing with me. Mm-hmm. You know, that pretty much. But it was not only that. It wasn't, and the thing was, I didn't even, it wasn't like I was heartbroken or any even cared, because I had to get rid of all the negative in my life, and
right.
that was a part of it, you know. And I had this inner thing about being very reclusive, you know. So after that, I became very reclusive. I didn't come out. I was still hurt too. I was still unable to work, unable to do anything. So I was in my house that I had fortunately purchased maybe a couple years before that, 3 or 4 years before that. You know, so I was living in this house, this four-bedroom home by myself, and I had shared custody of my children. That's the only people that I would see for a long time. Those are the only people who were my children. And my father, he'd come by all the time. And so, yeah, you lose a lot of friends when you walk this journey. You lose a lot of people. A lot of people think you're crazy. You know, a lot of people, they don't look into it. And one of the things I was told, and I do it now, and that sometimes I wish people had known this about, you know, when they dealt with me, but I was told there on the other side that I lost my chain of thought. Told on the other side.
Let's use this as a point to go back, because I had a question about something that you mentioned when you were on the other side. You said that you were with the three beings, and it appeared as though they were going to reincarnate you into another lifetime. But you pretty much, from what I understand, you had an attitude, and you were like, look, you guys sent me down here. You didn't give me any instructions, but you're telling me I'm doing this and this and this wrong, but you never told me how to do it. And so I feel like, do you feel like if you had not interjected and sort of challenged them, that you would not have gotten the opportunity to come back to your former life?
Yes, I honestly feel that. I feel that with every ounce of my being, that I was on my way to reincarnate and get it right in the next life. And I believe that wholeheartedly.
Wow. That's really interesting, because, from everything that I read in your account and your book and then what you're saying tonight, they were downloading you with, I guess, all of this hidden knowledge, divine knowledge, and they were, I guess, preparing you to enter another lifetime. And for some reason, they were gracious, I guess, to listen to you and to listen to your point of view and gave you an opportunity to go back to your former life using sort of your son's, the love for your son as a conduit. So I just thought that was a striking part of the story because you're in that realm. I wouldn't think that anger or frustration would be able to be felt, but apparently you had you felt a way enough so to where you, you know, challenge those three beings, which, you know, if I'm from my own point of view, I'm like, I would never do that. I would just, you know, I'm here. This is incredible. Whatever you guys want to do, we're just going to go with that. But I just thought that was a great part of the story and kind of changed the trajectory of what your outcome could have been, because you could have been reincarnated in a completely different life had you not interjected at that point.
Yeah, yeah. And that I look at that all the time. That, you know, that comes back because I'm going to tell you, man, the near-death thing, it never leaves you. Once you have it, you're like, it's like when you're growing up and you're young even in your 20s, you tend to forget about dying, you know? You forget about death. And, you know, I was invincible in my 20s. I jumped out of planes and things like that. You forget about dying. So, but after this near-death experience, there's not one day that goes by that I forget that I have to meet with God, you know? Not one day. So that's what compels me to do this. You know, it changes you as far as that. You don't look at things the same. The people that you're around or that you associated with before this, I none of them. You know, I found everybody that's in my life now is a new friend, except for my children and my wife. Even my wife is new. You know, she's a new friend as a matter of fact, because, you know, I didn't know her when all this happened.
It sounds like you had to let a lot of people go by the wayside of this, you know, new mentality that you had. I'm sure from your family's perspective, a lot of people are probably saying, oh, Jeff hasn't been right since he got out of the military. I'm sure a lot of them say that.
Yeah, they say that. They say that too. Yeah, they say that. From my family's perspective, you know, they all love me. And when I go around, it's always love. Yet they do things that aren't conducive with the lifestyle that I live. So I, you know, it's kind of like the church, you know, church folks don't hang out with the backsliders, you know, the sinners. You know?
The church folks.
Can
you tell that part of the story? Cause I think that's a critical part of the story where, there's an incident with your nephew and, tell that part.
So this part of the story, this is years of, let's see, 2016 is when this happened, and the end of 2016. So I'm 3 years into this, you know, 3 years into meditating every day, changed my diet. I changed everything, as a matter of fact, you know, changed my diet, changed everything about the way I live, the way I speak, more or less commanding life than just living by it. And at this time, you know, my brother, my brothers love me. So if I tell them something and it's from the bottom of my heart, they believe it is truth. You know, even though they can't see it, they'd be like, well, if you believe it, I believe it. You know, if you say it happened to you. So by this time, 3 years in, I've done so much work on helping people, using this gift to help people. It was a Friday and my brother calls me and he's like, Jeff, I need your help. He said, you know, my son, they had this game that they played. He was a junior in high school at this time, I think. This game they played where every Friday they would steal one of or two of their parents' medicines, and they'd all gather up before school and put them all together and then divvy them out, and everybody just popped one. That was the craziest thing, you know, crazy type of stuff that they were doing in high school at that time. And so my nephew, he takes somebody's medicine and he overdoses and he's in a coma. And my brother calls me and he said, Jeff, they said if he doesn't come out by Sunday, they're going to pull the plug. He's like, is there anything that you can do? And so at that moment, you know, my brother, I say, I'll see what I can do. you know, and that was a Friday. And the crazy thing, I always tell the story, is that I was helping so many people at that time and doing so much that it slipped my mind to meditate on him Friday night. My nephew's in a coma, and it slipped my mind. And then Saturday night comes, and I'm like, I got to go in and see what I could do. So I go into meditation, and I ask Metatron, what can we do? And Metatron takes me in the spirit, astral project, to this realm where my nephew is at. You know, my nephew, he's there, and it's like a playground setting, or there's a bunch of kids there, you know, adolescents, children who are there. And what I've come to understand is that they were all in comas. Everybody there was in a coma. And Jesus Christ was there. And he was ministering and comforting all of these kids in the coma. So Metatron takes me to my nephew, and we're off by ourselves, and we begin to talk. And I'm telling him, you know, come home. Your parents are missing you. You should come back. And I said, your dad's devastated. Your sister's devastated. Your stepmother's devastated. They want you. And he said to me, but they're mad at me. I don't want to come back. And at that time, Metatron is showing me my nephew's life. He's showing me that he's going to be helping people. And so I conveyed that to him. I said, you got to come back. Your life, man, you're going to be, you're sent here to help people. You know, you're going to be helping people. You're going to have a great life. You got to come back. And so he told me, all right, I'm coming back. But I didn't feel it, because somehow in that realm, you can't, when you tell it, if you hear a lie, you can't, it doesn't resonate. Like, so I'm like, no, you're not coming back. I said, you got to convince me that you're coming back. You know, and so we have this conversation, and he says, okay, I'm coming back. And I felt like he was coming back at this point. And he said, but I just want to stay here a little while longer, because the feeling that I feel here, this is the best feeling I ever felt. And I'm like, I know, isn't it? It's a great feeling. I said, so you're coming back? And he said, yeah. And with that, Metatron whisked me back, and I come back into my body. And as soon as I get back, it's early in the morning. It's like 2 a.m, 3 a.m. I get back. I text my brother everything that I said to his son and everything his son said to me. And I said, he'll be back. And then I fall asleep. Then I wake up to a text that Jeff, yes, confirmation. And at that time, I just let him spend time with his son, you know, and then we talk. And his son, this is the story my brother tells me, his son told him the same story that I texted him, you know, the same story, the same thing. And he's like, you know, he was there and he told me to come back, and I told him no. And then he told me that I'd be helping people and all of that. So that was some powerful stuff. That was my edification, to go from believing to knowing,
yeah,
you know. And today, you know, he's a firefighter in the city of Richmond, Virginia. So he's saving people's lives. You know, he's doing what we spoke about in that conversation on the other side. And there has been many.
If I was one of your family members, that would have made a believer out of me. Once I heard that account, and you know, when your nephew woke up and corroborated the story, and that would have made a believer out of me. I would have went from thinking you were crazy to, hey, maybe Jeff's got something here.
Yeah, a lot of them say, you know, there was a lot of things that I told my family that they ignored, and they watched it come to pass, and then they come and say, you know, you were right. Like, you know, I wouldn't have told you if I thought I was wrong. And I only get this stuff from the divine. It's only through meditation and staying close to God is where I get these things, you know. A lot of things like that. But, yeah, a few of them call me God. A lot of my friends, they'll call me JC too, meaning Jesus Christ, the Second Coming, things like that. But I always tell them, you know, we all have this. And that's what they sent me back to teach, is that we all have these powers and all have these gifts. It's about how much you want to detach from what the world is telling you what to do, how much of that do you want to detach from that? Because if you detach from that and focus on your spirituality and communicating with the Creator, you will see all of these gifts come to fruition. You'll see them happen in your lives. And I teach people this, but it takes some work, you know. It takes some discipline, and it takes some discipline, and you got to love yourself. You got to love the world. You have to love the Creator.
Well, I grew up Jehovah's Witness, so, you know, I think it's remarkable that I am open to hearing and believing any of this stuff. And I understand that not everybody is open to the idea of reincarnation and life after death and near death and out-of-body experiences. I know it's not for everyone, but right. I do believe that there are certain people that I think there comes a time in your life, maybe it's everyone or maybe it's select people, I don't know, but I feel that there's a point for some people where you start to challenge what you've been taught.
Yes, yes.
And not so much from a standpoint of unbelief, Jeff. I'm talking more so like a general curiosity as to, is there more to this?
Yes.
Or is there a higher level of understanding that can be ascertained? So more from that standpoint. You know,
yes, Dr.
and so I think that's what's going on with me. It's not that I disbelieve what I grew up believing. I still believe in Jehovah and Jesus Christ, and I pray in the name of Jesus, all that stuff. None of that has been lost. I don't think it ever be lost. But what I have seemed to have lost is this concept of religion. I believe it's a man-made distortion of the universal concepts that come from God or the source or the divine or whatever people want to refer to it as. I believe that mankind, and maybe this originated with, you know, darker energy, the devil or what have you, but I believe that they use religion to cause division here on earth and all sorts of chaos and, you know, use it as a way to manipulate us. And I think that's what that download of information that you were getting when you were in the, in that realm, they were trying to reveal to you hidden knowledge and say, hey, you guys, everything is not what it seems there. You're not being told the truth. You're not being presented all the information. So I think there was an uncovering of your eyes, so to speak. And that was part of your ministry that you were sent back with to share with those who are, you know, have an ear to hear and are open-minded about it. Would you agree?
Yes, I would agree wholeheartedly that we are definitely, that was one of the things, you know, we are definitely being manipulated into looking, seeing things differently, you know. One of the things that when I came to a conclusion after I studied all these things and you know, years of studying things, I come to the conclusion that it's all a facade, and everything we were taught, nothing we were taught is the truth.
Right.
It's like total manipulation the whole way.
Right.
And it's only when you wake up and see it, you know? I always, when I speak of these things, I use Reverend Ike reference. I was there too. I had the blinders on and I saw what you're seeing right now. Yet if you just take a moment and a brief second to question what you are seeing and go with your senses and what's inside of you, you'll see the truth, you know? And that's where, what leads me to continue to seek the truth and to continue to, in my work, to what I call wake people up, you know?
Right. Do you ever get tired of telling this story? Or is it more like a ministry to you and you get energized from it?
I do. I get energized from telling the story. I tell it so much, you know, it can be mundane to the person who's saying it, you know. Yet when I see or feel the energy of someone when I tell it to them for the first time, I realize that, you know, it's not mundane, Jeff. This, you know, you're just doing it day to day. So it gets a little boring to tell the story. Yet this whole thing has changed every aspect, the scope of my life, you know. So I love telling the story. And in the beginning, you know, you couldn't get me to stop telling the story. And hours go by so quickly when we're speaking, when I'm speaking, you know, this.
Right.
You know, so they taught me things from the aspect of naming my child. You know, I have a child since then, but they taught me that what I name my child is what I'll be calling them. So name it something that means something that's going to uplift them, you know, that's going to, and just that alone, you know, naming your child, the way you speak, the way we speak, they taught me how to speak without negatives towards myself. Never speak any negative towards myself, you know.
True.
Never speak in the negative when you want a thing from the universe, God. Never ask God to give you, to help you not do a thing, you know. Don't let me get into an accident. Never ask things like that. Don't even bring it into this realm. Don't even speak it into this realm, you know. As for I like the Christians say traveling mercies, or the way I do it is I visualize. Visualization is the imagination is the most powerful thing we have here. It's the most powerful tool that the Creator gave us, because with this imagination, we can imagine a thing and we can bring it into existence here. And that's what I do. This is what I teach people to do, how to use their imagination to visualize what they want here. You know, we can use the Christian scripture as above, whatever Jesus said, whatsoever you ask in heaven, that shall be given to you here on earth. Well, the way I interpret that is when I go to the place in meditation, that is the second heaven, you know, what I call the second heaven. So when I ask, when I'm in meditation, I visualize, I ask for what I want there, and then I know. Once I visualize it and ask for it there, it shall be given to me here in this realm, in the material. You know, every aspect of my life has from that day, learning that to this is about asking in the spirit and watching it materialize here on earth. And once you realize that that's how it works, it's not a begging. There's no begging or pleading with God. He gave us this power to man things into our lives, and so that's the way I use it, and that's the way I teach people to use it. You can ask. There's many, many different ways, and that's one thing I also always say too, is there are many I call them amulets that you can use in this realm. There's many things you can use in this realm to achieve what you want. You know, they'll call it I don't deal with any of the dark magic or anything dark. You know, because that, which I come to understand, is these things are real. These dark forces in this world are real, and that you can conjure them and you have no control over them.
Yes. And I was going to mention that to you because, mm-hmm. and I don't know, but I'm not a big fan of the whole tarot card type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Anything dealing with occult and magic and I'm just, you know, it does not feel right to me. I feel like that's a different type of energy. And you know, that's when you get into the whole conjuring things like you were talking about. Just like you can conjure good energy, good spirits, I think there's the other side too that you can conjure up. So you have to be really careful with that stuff, with these tarot cards and these, and I see a lot of people doing that online now. I don't think a lot of them realize that they're practicing in the occult. And they can attach themselves or become attached to negative entities that may not be so easy to get rid of.
Yes. And in my teachings, so I have, you know, I would have these on the fly teachings in my meditations where Metatron would take me in the spirit to the second heaven. And he would put me and I'd be around a number of dark beings. And this was one of my first lessons. And he said, now, none of these will touch you. And we walked through them. And he said, that's because you have the light of love in your heart. You have to keep the light. When you dabble in this, when you come to this second heaven, make sure you have the love of God in your heart, the love for everything in your heart. It said, because that is the light. These are dark beings. They cannot be, they cannot touch the light. They cannot come to the light. So if you have that light, which is love, in your heart, when you come to this realm, none of them can touch you, and they will all bow and shy away from you because you, they see the light that's in you. And this is how I traverse the second heaven. And it's not through any tarot cards or magic. It's just having the love of God in your heart, loving God and everything it told you, because God is everything. So you have to love everything, you know, if you're going to do these things. But that's what keeps the darkness away, that love that you have.
And that's one of those key tenets that I have noticed that's a common thread in all of these NDE accounts, is that they come back with God is everything, God is everywhere, love everybody, love everything. And, you know, so some things are just common. And even with religion, if you look at religion, you would think a lot of that would come from that, but I've seen too many times, even in the faith that I grew up with, where religion has made people feel bad about themselves, or has caused distances in families and relationships, and have caused division. That's not of God. When you're talking about division and you feeling bad about yourself, and you feeling, you know, convicted, or what's the word I'm looking for? Is it not convicted, but it's, if you're feeling negative thoughts toward yourself, or I'm not this enough or that enough.
Self-loathing. None of that's from God. Self-loathing. That was one of the first things that I had to do. And it said, you have to know who you are. That's what they told me. And what did that mean, man? I had to find out who I was. But what I can say is, knowing who you are means that you love yourself, you know, knowing that you are a piece, a prime piece of the infinite creator. And that's who you are. The Christians will call you a priestly, you know, you're the priest, the sons of God. This is who we are. We are actually a portion of the spirit of this infinite creator, you know, and our body houses that portion, which we'll call our soul. And we are a divine spark of the creator. And when you realize that and you know that, and that you have every power afforded to you in this realm that the creator has, it empowers you. It makes you, gives you more self-esteem when you realize it, you know, because we talk about this all the time. You know, you've probably heard the cliche, you know, God is everything. God is love. You know, God's in everything. Yet when you really contemplate it and get to know this thing, that's when it opens up for you, and you can start creating whatever you want. We're miniature creators of the creator.
Right. I think it's all in that one scripture, and I don't know what the exact scripture is, but it basically says, be still and know I am God.
Yes.
That's the whole thing right there. And he's saying, I am God. And he's also talking about yourself.
Yes.
We are God. I don't know why you don't understand that. Be still. That's telling you to meditate, to center yourself.
Yep.
Be still and know I am God.
Am
that
God.
He and is God, that you and yourself
that we are God. Yes. Yes.
And people don't understand it. And I didn't understand it for the longest. So I'm not chastising, but if you meditate on that scripture, it will get you to where you need to be mentally, to start opening yourself to a greater awareness of who you are, what you are, the power that you have. That's why I'm so energized about this topic. And NDE is not, you know, this spooky, mystical, weird thing and something that you need to be afraid of. And, oh, that's, you know, that's not in my Bible. No, it's just so much to it. I'm trying to get people to be more open to at least hearing about it and seeing what parts of it resonate with you. Maybe listen to a few more NDE accounts and see what you come away with. Notice those common threads that are in these stories. Every NDE story that I've heard, they've all come back with these same things. God is love. Love is everywhere. Love is in everything. Yeah. You don't get that from religion. You don't.
No, you don't.
You should do this. You should do that. You're bad if you don't do this. You're good if you do this. And the division and my religion is better than yours and all that. Can't you see how man-made and just crappy that is? That's not of God.
Yeah. Yeah. And when I look at the Christian religion, I look at it and I see that there were humans who started out wanting to do right by God. Mm-hmm. And then this faith was hijacked by those who wanted to seize power and control over people. You know, when I studied how Christianity came along and how, you know, when the emperors got a hold of it and did what they did to it. And that right there is where, you know, I draw the line with religion where I say, okay, I got to part from here because now you've interjected a lot of mankind's, how can I say, do-gooding that really wasn't necessary, you know. I even look at when by the time Jesus came on the scene, there was 10 commandments when Moses started. By the time Jesus came on, it was like 250-something commandments, you know, and he's like, look, y'all can't even keep your own laws, you know. So basically, man has a way of hijacking the goodness of God, you know, and if we just keep it simple and just keep our connection with it, you know, it guides us in all truth. It'll tell you anything you want to know. It'll slay your enemies. I've seen that many times in this journey, people who would call themselves my enemy and how they've either been taken out of this realm or their lives aren't doing the way that they wish that they would. This thing, it protects you. It's a protector. It's a comforter. It's like I could be in any part of the world by myself and knowing that I'm protected by the hand of the Almighty and that this guardian angel is right here with me, you know. There's a scripture in the Bible that says, lo, I am with you always, you know, even I'm with you always. And I tend to say it. I say it a lot and I reflect on it a lot. And I'll be doing something over these past 12 years, and I'll Metatron your hearing, and he'll say, I'm always with you. Even when you think I'm not with you, I'm right here. You know,
I was just about to ask you, do you still communicate with Metatron?
Oh, every day. Every day I still go into deep meditation. I don't do anything without meditating on it first and listening to Metatron. Even the book, how it came to pass was divine, you know. The publisher who came to me, you know, and said that he'd been, you know, I don't know if you know this story, but I'm going to tell this story because it's all divinely guided. You know, the publisher comes, he gets a hold of me, finds me, and he said, I've been looking, you know, I started this publishing company some years ago, and I've had a successful publishing company. One of the things that happened to me in the beginning of this when I started this company, is that I made a promise to God that I would dedicate my business to him. And he told me that he was going to bless my business. Yet, and somewhere in that career, in this thing, you have to write a book for somebody for free. Well, some years later, after this publishing company and I do an interview with on the Jeff Maher show, I believe, he contacts me and he says, I've been looking for years for the person I was going to write this book for free for, and it's you. And so that's how it started. And then I said, you know, I appreciate your offer. I got to meditate on it. And so I go and meditate, and Metatron tells me, you know what, give them 50% of everything. So, you know, 50% of everything. And with that, I went back with my offer the next day. I told him, yep, I'm willing to do it. but I'm not going to do it unless you get 50% of everything. With that, he gave me an agent, a booking agent, and a manager, and he said, we're going to push this thing all over the world, you know, through interviews, YouTube interviews, and Skype, on Skype and Zoom. And we've been doing that for a year and a half, and the response has been overwhelming. But it was only that, I listened to Metatron that I got this, because it was his offer was, I'm going to just write the book for you. You do everything else. You know, you push it, promote it, whatever, you know. And I know people who write books, it's hard to push and promote a book, you know. And so he took on that for the sake of the book, for his stake in it. Now he's got a 50% stake in it, which I'm happy with. I don't mind, because one thing I've learned is these material things aren't where it's at, man. The moment I died, all of the material things I had meant nothing.
Right.
Nothing. They meant nothing. You know, and the only reason I have a material thing is because in this life, that I would say a luxury or anything, is because in my own personal spirit, I particularly like that thing. There's no influencer from the outside world that tells me I need to drive a Mercedes, or that I need to drive this, or that I need to have that. Because what I've come to understand is that these things mean nothing. They're temporary, and they're here for temporarily. We'll have them for a short amount of time, and that's it. There's no need to kill, steal, and hurt people over these material things in this world. But a lot of people don't see that, you know. And I'm fortunate and blessed to see those things.
I used to be one of those people that were, you know, caught up in the whole materialistic side of things, and I'm glad I've been able to loose that over the years. Yeah. None of that stuff matters. At this point in my life, I love peace.
Yeah.
I love solitude, and I love meditation. I'm a baby in meditation. I've only been doing it for maybe less than a year. And over the past, I'll say this year, I've started doing it maybe twice a day for 10 minutes early in the morning, 10 minutes at night. And speaking of meditation, and I know we're going over time, we're going to wrap up shortly.
No worries.
I heard that you mentioned in another podcast when I was preparing for this show, I think it was it Jeff Mara or something like that?
Jeff Mara,
yes. You talked about guided meditation. It was sort of your go-to practice.
You did
touch on the DMT stuff and all of that, but you really spoke highly of the guided meditation, and I think there was, what was the guy's name? Was it Paul Santisi?
Paul Santisi, yes.
I tried his Remove Negative Blocks guided meditation yesterday, and it was the most incredible experience. At first, I didn't think it was going to work, but before I knew it, I was in this weird place. I knew where I was in my subconscious mind, which I had never been able to touch or dabble in or experience. I could feel and sense everything on the outside of my body, but I was in my subconscious mind. And it was just such a weird and eerie feeling, but it also felt great. I saw all types of visions and sensations and symbols. And I was getting a little afraid, because I was like, how do I get out of this? Is it going to guide me out of this state? It was almost like being in a trance.
Yeah,
but it was the most wonderful experience. It felt like maybe 10 or 15 minutes, but if you know that particular meditation, it's over. It's almost an hour and a half long.
Yeah,
I was
pretty long.
In this deep trance for over an hour. It felt like 10, 15 minutes, and it was just incredible. I was like, okay, now I see what Jeff is talking about. This is it right here.
Yes, and here's the secret. When you're there, that's when you visualize what you want. See yourself having it. See yourself, whatever it is that you want. See yourself in your happy state of achieving it. So if it's a car, see yourself in it with all of the luxuries that you want in it. You know, the leather seats, play with the radio. You know, this is how you manifest, you know, your dream home. the same way. You go in and you do that. You know, anything, though, you know, you got a pressing business meeting. You know, you got an interview with this guy named Dr. Jerry, you know, this renowned doctor, and with the radio show, you know, you go in and you visualize it the way that you want it to come out. And then you, when you come out of it, leave it right there. Leave it there and just know that the universe, God, whatever you want to call it, is going to make it happen. This was the most profound thing, you know, when I discovered meditation, was the most profound thing was that I thought meditation just, you know, calm the mind and that's all you do. You go in and that's a great thing, to calm the mind, to silence the mind, to get rid of all the negative that you accumulated throughout the day, you know, or to call into existence your day that's coming. So yeah, when I was shown that this is where you manifest what you want in your life. As above, so below. Whatsoever you ask in heaven, it shall be given unto you. You know, that on earth. And that's what it is right there. And that, yeah, it's powerful stuff, man. I'm glad to hear that, man. You just raised my vibration 10 times.
Oh, man. I was so excited to talk to you, man. The visualization stuff works. I visualized our conversation this morning about how this would go. Mm-hmm. I visualized us laughing and talking and just having a really good conversation, and that's what came to pass. Visualization really does work. That's
it does.
A prayer. That's not to distract
prayer.
Anyone from praying to God, but that's how you call into your life what you want to experience.
Yes. That's how I pray.
That's how I pray. And I still pray the traditional way, but I found that meditation helps to draw things because it clears your mind and you also get to visualize what you want, whether it's a vacation or, like you said, a car or just a certain set of circumstances or what have you, or doing well on an interview, just any number of things. You want to visualize that in your mind and picture it going the way you want it to go. So, this has been an enlightening show. I'm sorry we went over time, but thank you so much for being generous with your time with us. I've enjoyed it so much. I know our listeners have enjoyed it. And like I said, I truly appreciate you. Before we close out, though, do you have any final words of wisdom for our listeners tonight?
What I can say is that this story that I tell, it's my story, yet everything in there is for everybody. So when I speak about these gifts that I have, these powers, how to manifest, how to meditate, how to walk in this life, it's for you. I'm speaking to your audience. It's for you. It is for you. It's for all of us. And that's one of the things that they showed me and I was told to convey, that everyone here is chosen. Everyone. It's up to you to say, okay, I'm chosen. And this is my purpose, and I'm going for it. You know, everybody has this power. You just have to tap into it. It'll take some work, and it's not work. It's more mental work than anything, you know, disciplining yourself to get in touch with that thing we call God. And always, always, always give gratitude to God, the Creator. Whatever you call it in your circle, the universe, God, the Creator, always give gratitude and thankfulness to that thing we call God, and you can't go wrong, man. You pursue
gratitude
whatever you want.
The gateway.
It's the key, man. It's the key.
Well said, brother. Well said. All right, everyone. That's our show for tonight. Huge thanks once again to Mr. Jeff Cleckley. If you'd like to dive deeper into his near-death experience, grab a copy of his book. It's called I Walk Amongst Gods, and it's available now on Amazon, or you can visit his website, iwalkamongstgods.com, and you'll get access to his guided meditations and information about upcoming retreats and other speaking engagements. As always, you can catch a replay of this episode on artistfirst.com or wherever you stream your favorite shows. Be sure to join me next Wednesday, June 18th, at 6 p.m. Eastern. It's going to be another live episode of the show. So thank you, guys. I'm your host, Andre Jerry. And until next time, stay grounded, stay growing. And if you do happen to find yourself walking amongst gods, just make sure you come back with a good story. All right. Good night, everybody. Take care.